behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Zoom Bolin.
Zoom Bolin.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm bringing the nickname thing back. Remember how years ago, Scott, we had this thing where listeners would write in and give us different nicknames, like Oil Can.
Yeah, you know what? We had somebody that that wrote in recently. Was it Rudy, maybe? I think it was maybe Rudy Smith who wrote in and said that he would like to see the old name nicknames come back.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Maybe we should do that. And I think he even mentioned a couple. So I'll tell you what, we'll dig into it. And maybe in a couple of episodes from now, we'll start doing that again. How about that?
You got it,
all
Scott,
right.
Oil Can Benjamin.
And maybe listeners can write in with email suggestions. They can, you know, when they email in with ideas or whatever.
Sure.
They can include their own middle name nickname if they want. How about that?
We would love that. That's a great idea.
And suggestions for us because we run out.
Yeah.
We've used so many. All right. So today, Ben, we're talking about the 10 fastest cars in the world. And this is always an intriguing list.
Yeah. And usually it's always going to be a contentious one because as we will find, one man's fastest car is another man's second or third fastest, depending upon the rules of the measurement.
Yeah. There's some criteria that we're going to have these cars meet here. Now, it's based on an article that we had written here at How Stuff Works by
Charisse Lepine.
Yeah, right? Freelance writer. Her name is Charisse, and great job on the article. It's fascinating. You know, information, all good and all up to date, which is the most important thing on a top 10 list like this.
Okay.
So this is a current top 10 list of the flat out fastest cars in the world. Now it's not the quickest 0 to 60 list. It's not the fastest to 100 or the best time on the Nürburgring or anything like that. This is just flat out top speed. Fastest cars around, certified, confirmed top speed, not claimed, manufacturer top speed.
Right.
Because that would vary quite a bit. You know, they'd say like, well, it's capable of 275, but we only got it up to 198, whatever that is, something like that. So we've got this list that she created that, and it's got two bits of criteria here. And the first is that it's only street legal production cars.
Right. So no one-off mad science experiments.
Yeah, exactly right. So any modifieds, the Toyota Supra that they boosted up to 1500 horsepower, that doesn't count. These are from the manufacturer, the way the manufacturer built them. So it levels the playing field in that all the cars are designed and built to be driven on the street. And theoretically, anybody can buy one.
Ah, and this brings us to the second qualification, which I thought was really interesting. In case of a tie, the same top speed, right? The quicker one, and that's the one with the fastest 0 to 60 acceleration, it qualifies as the fastest one.
Exactly, because there just had to be some way to break the tie in a top 10 list. You can't have two at the same. So that was a kind of a neat way to go around that, I think. That was a good little bit of problem solving there. Now, of course, we could do another list, I guess, for the quickest car if you wanted to.
Right,
But that's
fastest
not what this,
0 to 60.
That's not what this is about. That was just simply to serve to break the tie.
Yeah.
And that's it. You want to jump into this list and see where it takes us?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. Well, there's a couple of difficult pronunciations here, and I have done my best to phonetically spell these out, and I'll see what I can do, okay?
All right.
All right. So number 10 on the list is one that is maybe the most difficult on the list. It is the Pagani Huayra.
Huayra. Pagani.
You're right. Huayra. That's right.
Pagani Huayra comes to us from Italy. And of course, as we know, Italy has a long and dignified tradition of making fantastic exotic cars.
Exactly right. Now, to start at number 10, I want to point this out. We're starting this list at 230 miles per hour. So this is a fast top 10 list. 230 just gets you into the number 10 spot on this list.
That just buys you the cheap seats in this list. And for everybody else using the metric system, that's just a hair over 370.
Exactly right. So this is a car that you mentioned comes from Italy. I think there was a car from the same company called the Zonda for a long time.
Yep.
A car that they kept around for about a decade. And then they moved up to the, how do you say it again? Huayra. And the Huayra is exceedingly quick. I mean, it's fast, I should say. It's powered by a twin-turbo 6-liter V12 engine that comes from Mercedes-Benz. So it's a powerful, powerful engine. And there's one other little interesting note that I think we should mention. That's about the founder, right?
Yeah, the founder is an Argentinian, an Argentine named Horacio Pagani, and he formerly was the composite material manager or engineer for Lamborghini.
Oh, kind of makes sense. This guy's been around supercars, and he knows what he's doing.
Right.
He obviously learned the trade or the craft at Lamborghini, and you know, or maybe he came in with experience. I'm not sure. I don't know how the timetable worked on that, but he clearly, I mean, take a look at that car, Ben. That's a gorgeous car. That's is definitely, I mean, he learned something there, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that carbon fiber, of course, as we know, plays a great role in the speed of this vehicle.
Oh, absolutely. As we talk about all these, you got to remember that that composites are used throughout. There's lightweight metals. There's all kinds of, you know, we call it space-age technology, I guess.
Right.
And, you know, the lightweight materials that are used. And even though we're talking about cars that, you know, and sometimes they'll exceed 1,000 horsepower, and we'll tell you when they do.
Yeah.
But, you know, lightweight plays a huge role in this top speed, this overall list, really.
And let's go to number 9 on our list, the Zenvo ST1.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in at number 9 with 233 miles per hour or 375 kilometers.
Yeah, and this is one that I just mentioned goes over 1,000 horsepower. This one has 1,250 horsepower. It has a 7-liter V8 engine, and this one's from Denmark, Ben.
Yeah. So I like the way that Charisse wrote this. What's the most powerful toy to come out of Denmark in recent memory? If you guessed Lego bricks, you're not even close.
That's right. Yeah, so Lego comes from Denmark. So does the Zenvo ST1. And the ST1, did we already say this, 233 miles per hour?
Yeah, we said that, but we didn't mention that it has a one of those little homologation kind of qualifications here, because it's the production run, Scott,
mm-hmm.
15 cars.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, and just 3 of those cars ever came to the United States here for us. So 12 of them are living somewhere else in the world. But 15 cars. Now, there's going to be some weirdness about this number of vehicles produced thing, because in order to be included in the Guinness, I'm going to flip back to my notes to page 1 here, Ben, where I wrote a note about this, because Guinness, in order to qualify for the Guinness Book of World Records, supposedly you have to have 30 examples built of each vehicle. So that's what they call a production vehicle. Now,
right.
There's, I guess, some contention to that rule, and people saying, well, we're only going to build 20 of these, but it's still a production car because we're not building them, you know, just for individual customers. We're not saying, like, here's one car that we're going to build for you that's unlike any other car.
Right.
They're all going to be relatively the same power plant, same outward appearance. They may have a couple features here and there.
Cosmetic differences.
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, what's the difference, I guess, if we build 20 or if we build 30? That's what Guinness says. Guinness says it's 30. All right, you know, this list that we're going to follow here, it doesn't necessarily follow the 30-car production limit requirement. But also we find that Guinness kind of backtracks on their rule as well. So Guinness will make exceptions to the rule. As we go along, we'll find that happened a few times. And it's just this weird kind of back and forth between the manufacturer, Guinness, and any other, you know, record qualifying sanctioning body, I guess, that says you have to meet these criteria. And we'll find that this list kind of varies from that as well. You know, that we include some cars that are less than 30 produced. Maybe that's a future podcast. Who knows? You know, automobile, how they create these automobile records, like what the process is for deciding who's the fastest, you know, who's the longest limousine, whatever.
Right. We rant because we run into some contentious arguments anytime we look at something like that.
Yeah. Anytime we try to say it's the fastest, shortest, smallest, tallest,
quickest,
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. All that stuff. So, you know, one thing that, that we can't overlook on this one, though, when we're still talking about the Zenvo, is that it's very exclusive, right?
I mean,
we mentioned the limited production numbers, but we didn't talk about the price.
Yeah. Denmark is not a country known for its rock bottom auto prices, and the Zenvo is no exception. It's weighing in at the base price of $1.8 million.
Holy cow. That's up there with Bugatti as far as price goes.
Right.
So huge, huge money. And as you can imagine, parts are expensive as well, because, you know, how do you get parts for a car where they only made 15 copies of this thing ever?
Oh, well, you ship it back to the United States for any extensive repair. I mean, Denmark, from the United States to Denmark.
Holy cow. That's got to be that alone. I mean, that's got to be a $10,000 tab there just for that.
If that low,
a spot on
ridiculous.
A spot on a cargo plane or something. God. All right, so let's move on to number 8.
Yeah,
number 8. This one is surprising that it still is at number 8.
Our old friend, the McLaren F1.
Yeah, McLaren F1 at 240 miles per hour. Now I cannot believe that this car is still on this list. I mean, I knew it was fast. Now, this is from British automaker McLaren. They were built between 1994 and 1998. So that means that, you know, at oldest, they're 20 years old.
Right.
At the youngest of any of these F1s could be is 16 years old at this point, and it's still hanging in there at number 8 with all the rest of these vehicles.
Well, it's a work of art, really. It's got that BMW Source 6.1 liter V12 engine, 240 miles an hour, 386 clicks per hour. Also, I think it's one of the only 3-seater cars on this list.
Oh, yeah, which is
the only because of that unique cockpit.
That strange cockpit design as well with the center seating position for the driver. And I think that's one of the standout features on this thing.
It makes sense to me. Does it make sense to you?
It really does.
The driver in the middle of the car?
It makes perfect sense. That's why a lot of race cars do that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, we just don't see that in production cars, and it makes it so unique and so cool. That I don't know. I think people really just fall in love with this car when they see it in person. And you know, the McLaren F1, for it to hang in there for at least 16 years in the top 10 list, that's amazing.
Plus, we should point out we have an entire McLaren podcast if you'd like to learn more about these amazing vehicles and the guy responsible for them.
Yeah, Bruce McLaren. Mm-hmm. And we also talked about the recent hybrid, right?
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah,
the P1.
Uh-huh.
So we've got a couple of different McLaren podcasts if you want to look at those. Let's move on to number 7. The Saline S7 twin turbo comes in at 248 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm. And it's a California car.
Yeah, so it's another American car making the list. Now, this is from tuner Steve Saline, who was a Mustang tuner prior to being a supercar builder. He just kind of got into the supercar game. I don't know how to say it. I mean, I guess he was around cars, around fast cars, decided he wanted to try his hand at it. And then I think, you know, the idea here maybe is that he had the idea, you know, somewhere down the road, I'm going to take on some of the big guys. I'm going to take on the fastest in the world. And that's when he decided to go with the twin turbo setup.
Yeah. And it's a 7-liter V8 Ford power plant.
Because the initial car wasn't twin turbo.
Right. Yeah.
It was strictly the 7-liter V8.
Yeah.
And they said that it was somewhere along the lines of like what they used in the NASCAR cars,
right. Yeah.
Which is incredible. I mean, you know, something like that. You know, we're talking, you know, ballpark. You know, that's funny because I would think that a NASCAR engine, maybe not back then though, would be around 800 horsepower.
Right.
Right now with twin turbos, it's at about 750 horsepower. I would assume that that's got to be something with emissions and, you know, all the federal regulations and things like that that have been set up. You know, Ben, I've seen one of these on the road. One.
What? Where? Here?
Just one. That's it. And I think it was around 2003 when the initial S7 was around. So I doubt I saw a twin turbo. I think I saw the original one, the original launch of these things. It was during the Woodward Dream Cruise in Detroit in Michigan. And I saw it on a back street in Birmingham, Michigan. I was driving, I think it was on a weekend, and I was driving into work or something like that. And it was on a back road, and, it just, you know, it was going one way. I was going the other way. So I only saw it for a second, but, it's a standout car. Like you remember, I mean, that was a good 11 years ago. And I remember the day that I saw it very clearly because it was just that unusual to see one.
It's got a unique profile for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of that orange, that burnt orange color. It was a beautiful car. Really, really cool. Striking. All right, so number 6. All right, here's another difficult one to pronounce, but I'm going to give it a shot, all right? We've talked about this one on the podcast before. Koenigsegg. Oh, I think I got it.
Yeah, you did pretty good. The Koenigsegg CCR.
Yeah, that's right. 250 miles per hour. So we're breaking into 250 miles per hour now.
Not bad.
Yeah, pretty good. And we're still at number 6. Again, it's a Swedish car. And has an aluminum V8 with 806 horsepower. Now, that is a lot less horsepower than some of them we've already talked about that are higher up on the list.
Yeah.
The difference is the weight.
Yeah, that makes sense because this is, also there's another one where Guinness must have waived its requirement for those 30 cars.
Oh, definitely, yeah, because there were very few built, right?
Right, yeah. For a while, the Koenigsegg, the CCR at least, held the top slot for speed.
Yeah, and there were only 14 of these things, Ben.
Yeah.
14, and the thing, you know, with the CCR and the CCX, you'll see these on a couple of different top 10 lists as the writer points out here, as Charisse points out, that, they seem to talk about them as if they're interchangeable, but they're not.
No, the CCX is made specifically for the U.S., right?
Yeah, the CCR is for Europe only, right? Europe consumption only.
Right.
European
yeah.
consumption
right.
only. And, the CCX, as you said, is for, North America.
Right. And there are only 14 of those as well over 5 years. So
yeah.
if you have seen one of these, you know, congratulations. You're probably never going to see one again.
That is another ultra rare car. So, you know, that's, boy, it's an exclusive club, isn't it, Ben, to be in
yeah.
These top speed clubs, I guess.
You know what else is an exclusive club, Scott?
What's that?
I gotta tell you about this. Netflix Instant has just blown my mind recently.
Mm-hmm.
They've been coming out with all kinds of new stuff, all sorts of foreign films, and I feel like I'm a member of an exclusive club. I've also run into something rare for both of us, which is free time. Having free time where I can just sit down and just chill out for a little bit is a bit like seeing a Koenigsegg CCR.
What is this free time that you talk about, Ben?
Well, in my case, what I'd really like it to be is time for me to kick up my feet and watch something on Netflix, but I have just enough time to watch something, Scott. I don't have enough time to go through the thousands of choices they have, so I'm coming to you. Do you have a recommendation?
I will narrow it down for you. How about this one? There's one from 1986 that I think is worth watching strictly for the cars involved in this thing. It's called Black Moon Rising.
Ooh.
And again, 1986, it's rated R, so again, not for everybody. That seems to be the way a lot of these are.
Yeah. All the good movies are rated R.
I know. We need to go back to the old rating system where PG was a little more, you know, wishy-washy. On
oh, yeah.
Lot,
yeah.
You know? Anyways, all right, so we digress. Summary of this one real quick. Sam
yeah.
Quint, who's played by Tommy Lee Jones. You know Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh,
the Fugitive,
fan.
Men
huge
in Black,
fan. Yeah.
No Country for Old Men.
Yep.
He is a much younger looking Tommy Lee Jones, obviously, in this movie, but he plays, an expert burglar hired by the FBI to steal top secret data from a suspect company. And, he follows through on his latest assignment, but he leaves the data behind in an experimental supercar known as Black Moon Rising. And I'm going to show you a photo of Black Moon Rising in just a moment, Ben.
Cool.
When the vehicle is subsequently stolen, of course it's stolen, Quint's life depends on getting it back. So this is a dire need for him to get this vehicle back. Now, it also has Linda Hamilton. She played Sarah Connor in the Terminator movies. You remember her?
Uh-huh.
And this
yeah.
was right, I think the Terminator movies were in 84, so this is just after that. So this, she's a big-time star.
Right, she's A-list.
Yeah, sure. Exactly, in this movie. And, she co-stars as a car thief. And then Robert Vaughn, who was in the Superman movies, I think Superman 3, Delta Force, the Man from U.N.C.L.E., you may recognize
wow,
him from that
yeah,
series
yeah.
on television. He plays her boyfriend, and he is also the head of, and this is key, Ben, he's the head of a stolen auto ring. Now, the cool thing about this whole thing is that he's head of the stolen auto ring, and she's a car thief. They have this warehouse where they bring in these cars that they've stolen.
Oh.
And
I
there
see.
Is a huge list of cars that are in this vehicle, in this movie rather. And I mean, I'll just list you a few of them, but
yeah.
the real star of the show I'll get to in just a second. There's an Auburn Speedster replica. There's a 1950 Bentley Mark V. There's a 1972
wow.
Ferrari Dino 246, which is really cool. 71 Pantera, a 74 Dodge Power Wagon, a 69 Jaguar XKE. You know, like a 67 Lincoln and a 83 Maserati. It's just this
wow
this wide, wide sampling of cars.
So wait. I just want to point out a plot hole here.
Okay.
It's not really stolen auto ring unless you're also flipping the cars. These are car hoarders.
To me, it looks like he is maybe, there may be a little bit of chop shop involved.
Okay.
But, you know, there's just always activity going on in the garage. So you always see people, you know, going to and fro with parts and working
okay.
on cars and removing wheels and things like that and shifting.
Private collectors.
Yeah, exactly. Shifting these things around. So
scratching the
But
VIN.
The real star of this thing, Ben, the real reason to watch this movie, and I'm going to show you a picture of this. This is the 1977 Concordia II. See it there at the bottom?
What? I remember the Concordia.
And that is a true concept vehicle.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you want to do yourself a favor, you know, early on and take a look at, you know, photos of the Concordia. It's an actual concept car from, I want to say that it was, well, it says it's the 1977 Concordia, but I've seen it listed as 1984, Beaujardin Concordia 2, which I don't, this is kind of confusing on the years, but, again, it's a real concept car, real prototype, and it's so unusual. It's so angular, so futuristic looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they show it in action in the movie, so it's something that I think is worth looking into.
So it's drivable.
Yeah.
Well, what is it in the movie? No, no spoilers. Don't tell me, and don't tell the audience either, because we do have something else to tell you guys. We have good news. If you do not yet have exclusive membership into the virtual country club known as Netflix Instant, well, you can get in just from knowing us. That's right. Go to netflix.com/carstuff. Tell them Scott and Ben sent you, and you can watch Netflix for free for a month.
Yeah. Full 30-day trial membership, just because you know us. And, you know, if you don't want to get Black Moon Rising, that's fine, but it's one that's available right now because, you know, the titles are subject to availability, but we know that Black Moon Rising is there. It's got these really cool cars in it, plus the 1977 Concordia 2, which is a standout in this movie.
Which is going to make me watch it.
I'm not going to say anything about the acting because it is 1986, and you kind of know how that goes. A little cheesy, but, I don't know. This is worth it to see that car in action.
Right. Yeah. And along with that, you can check out other documentaries, other television shows like Top Gear, other films as well. I mean, The Avengers is on there for Pete's sake. Just let us know, what you think and check out the opportunity before it, zooms by you. Speaking of
zooming by you.
Right.
What
yeah.
a transition.
Oh boy. Yeah. That's a rough one.
Smooth. Very smooth.
Any
very
segue
smooth.
We can stumble away from.
I think that's okay. We'll go with that one. So the next one on our list here, I think we were at number five, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. The number five, and this one is one that I had never heard of, but man, do I love the photo of this car in the article.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of, nostalgic for the paint job. You know what I mean?
I am too. It's a Gulf paint job. Isn't
yeah.
It? Yeah. It's beautiful. And but it's a great big fat Porsche, and that's what it looks like. It's like it's low and wide, and it's beautiful. It's the 9FF GT9R, and this one, Ben, tops in at 257 miles per hour, and it's a street car. This is a car you could drive on the road if you wanted to. Incredible.
Yeah.
So the thing is that this was just limited to 20 vehicles in production from Porsche Tuner 9FF. That's a company. That was the name of their company.
Pretty 9, well known too.
9FF. Unfortunately, the company filed for bankruptcy in 2013, so I doubt that any other, you know, 9FF tuner vehicles will be out there after this one. But
right, yeah. If you look at this car, what you're going to notice is that it's a bit of a mutated Porsche 911, right?
That's exactly right, and it's got strong engine, but it doesn't sound like a lot, Ben. It's a 4-liter six cylinder boxer engine that pushes the horsepower all the way up into four figure range. So a six cylinder engine, Ben, that has over 1,000 horsepower. In fact, it has 1,120 horsepower. And, holy cow. I mean, how do they get that much power out of a 4-liter six cylinder engine? I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful car. I mean, really nice.
It really is.
I like it a lot. This is maybe one of my favorite looking vehicles on the whole list.
You know what, Scott? I would agree with this too. And it's sad that, they're going to be so rare unless somebody takes up the mantle of 9FF. But one thing that we should also note is that since it could go, let's see, if we're converting the miles, it's a little over 400 kilometers per hour. So it's
sure.
413 and a half or so. Mm-hmm. And this makes this GT9R one of the first street legal race cars to cross that 400K mark.
Really? All right. So this is a kind of a specialty in that sense as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move on to number four, which, by the way, this is a tie with number five. Remember that rule you mentioned before?
Yep.
The 0-60 rule.
Yep.
This was what gives the SSC Ultimate Aero the edge, because it also comes in at 257 miles per hour. Exactly the same as the 9FF GT9R. And the Ultimate Aero, if you remember, they held the world's fastest car title for quite some time.
Quite
I think it was right around 2007, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had the actual, you know, top speed run that was recorded somewhere in, I want to say in Washington, right? Washington State.
Yeah. It was recorded in Washington State, but they also did a, they also did a race in, on down 93 in Nevada.
Yeah, these are public roads. It was doing the testing on public roads. They're long, flat, straight public roads.
And Guinness verified the run in Washington.
Exactly right. I mean, they had it all blocked off. It was all sanctioned event and everything. It was, you know, safe supposedly to do it for everybody except for the driver and
right.
anybody within a mile, I guess, where this thing would, you know, careen off the road. But you can watch the top speed run. I remember watching the fastest run back in 2007. Mm-hmm. And, this thing is quick 0 to 60. And that's what gave it the edge, by the way. Mm-hmm. 2.7 seconds 0 to 60. So it's like, that's like motorcycle fast.
No really. Traction control, no anti-lock brakes.
I know. This is just a bare bones, like flat out race car. Almost.
It's a bullet on wheels.
It really is. I mean, and this was, of course, you got to remember in 2007, it still was battling against cars like the Bugatti Veyron.
Right. And losing for a while.
Well, this one, had the record for a while.
Yeah.
I wonder, Ben, I was also thinking about this. You ever heard of sandbagging?
Yes.
You know what sandbagging is, right? So I was wondering if Bugatti was maybe sandbagging just a little bit around that time. Because they had this incredible car, 1,001 horsepower
right.
in the Veyron.
Yeah.
And then here comes the Ultimate Aero, and they topped the record just by a little bit. And then very shortly after that, the Bugatti Veyron bested this one again. And, you know, it just kind of progresses that way in this leapfrog-type scenario.
I wouldn't be surprised. You don't want to show your whole hand.
That's what I think is going on. I think there's always a little bit of sandbagging going on by the manufacturers in these top speed tests. So, you know, when we get to the number one, I mean, I wonder if they're holding back or if that's it, you know?
that's a good question.
There always could be a little bit more.
All right. To do that, we'll have to first meet number three. Don't call it a comeback. It is our friends there at Koenigsegg again, this time with the Agera R?
That's exactly right, Ben. I looked up the pronunciation, and that is exactly right. So good job. Another one from the Swedes here. You remember the Koenigsegg CCR was number six. This is number three with the Agera R. And this one has, I say only, but geez, Ben, only 1,140 horsepower. But it's so lightweight. I mean, you can look at this photo. You can see that the entire body is carbon fiber.
Yeah, you can see the carbon fiber, and this one also has a little bit of a debate about its speed, because it's clocked at 260 miles per hour, or 418 kilometers approximately. And according to Koenigsegg, it has a theoretical top speed of 273. It's just no one's been able to get it up there yet.
Ah, and see, now that may be a situation where they just haven't had enough space.
Yeah.
And the space is really matters, as we're going to talk about in the number two entry here. I want to get to that point and as we talk about it. But, again, this is a super fast car. I mean, I've watched some videos about this, and I want to point one video at it. We haven't
directed videos
anybody.
Yet.
Not yet, but I want to direct some people to our listeners to, a particular video that's called, it's a YouTube video. It's called Koenigsegg Agera R Owns Bugatti Veyron. Now, that's a funny name, I know, and it's just a little kind of, a bit of footage that's thrown together from some testing that they were doing. And, you know, it's kind of like the Koenigsegg reps were talking with some journalists that were there to review the vehicle and shoot the car and, you know, see what it could do. And there's some incredible shots of this thing on the track and what it can do, because I had no idea, Ben. Now, this is one that it also holds the record that we should mention here, and this is important, that it can accelerate from 0 to 186.4 miles per hour and then back to 0 in just 21.19 seconds.
So let's underline that again. We're not saying that it can just accelerate to that speed. We're saying it can accelerate to that speed and then back to a full stop.
Exactly right. Stop, full speed. Well, not full speed, but 186.4. And then full stop again in 21.19 seconds. That's incredible speed. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, I mean, they show you that, you know, while it's going 186 miles per hour, you can take your hands off the steering wheel and brake down to zero hard without ever having to touch the wheel. It's that firm. It's that solid on the track.
Wow.
And then to further that point, you know, about the handling of this car, because this is where this thing is a standout. They show you, now this is incredible, Ben. You have to see this to believe it. And that's why I pointed you to that video that, Koenigsegg Agera R owns Bugatti Veyron. At 100 miles per hour, the driver of the car, you know, he has the journalist next to him. The driver just starts whipping the wheel back and forth, left and right, and the car just stays flat and firm on the track. No skidding, no sliding out, no anything. It's just absolutely firm on the track. And it's incredible. I mean, it's really wild to see it from outside the vehicle. Inside, it looks terrifying.
Yeah.
Outside, you wouldn't believe what's happening. I mean, it doesn't look like it's possible. It shouldn't stick at that speed.
Oh, man.
Amazing. Amazing
for,
car.
The low, low price of $32,000. No, I'm kidding.
32, yeah, that's right.
Wouldn't
yeah.
that be?
Slightly more than the average
we
sedan.
Would, oh, we would finally open up that dealership we've been talking about.
That's right. All right, so here on, we're up to number two on our list.
Yeah.
I don't think this will surprise anybody. Maybe that it's at number two, though.
Yeah, that's what's going to be the surprise, because the Bugatti Veyron Super Sport comes in at 260 miles per hour. That translates to a little bit over 430 kilometers per hour. Now,
yeah, 268. That's yeah. a crazy speed. That's super high.
Now, Bugatti fans, Bugatti enthusiasts, I know that you guys might already be moaning about this number two. Like, oh, that's bull
BS.
Crap.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
But there is a reason, of course, because, you know, Bugatti has seemed to always be in this number one, number two spot,
sure.
right? Which goes back to your earlier, I don't want to call it conspiracy theory, Scott, but your question about
yeah.
sandbagging.
Yeah, that's right. And also it has to deal with the track. Now the track yeah. apparently really does matter in this situation, like where it's tested. Now, you know, we're talking about speeds above Formula One car speeds. We're talking about speeds that you don't see on racetracks even, unless you're talking about maybe a drag strip where, you know, it's a top fuel dragster or something. But we're talking about, you know, street legal vehicles again. And the track, as I mentioned, you wouldn't think it'd have a whole lot to do with it. But you know that test track where, if you watch that old Top Gear episode where they took the Bugatti Veyron,
yeah,
not the Supersport, but the Veyron,
right.
I think it was up to 257 miles per hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that track is like one of those super long, flat, I mean, just endless stretch of pavement type tracks. It's owned by Volkswagen. It's called, what is it called?
The Aralesian.
Yeah, Aralesian. It's the track. It's an oval test track. It's owned by Bugatti, you know, by their parent company, I should say, Volkswagen. And the thing is about that track that it gives you the opportunity to get up to something like 150 miles per hour before you even enter the straight. Then you've got that long, long straight. And then the key to this whole thing, Ben, maybe the biggest key to this is what?
Is that you don't have to worry about stopping when the pavement runs out, because other test tracks that are just a straight drag require some very precise math to say, okay, I'm going to start here. I'm going to pick up this. I know at this point in the track, I'll hit this speed, and then I'm going to try my best to top it, you know, speed X here at 270, 280, whatever.
Yeah.
And then instantly after that, I have to begin decelerating because I have X number of seconds at that speed before I hit the end of the runway.
Yeah, before, you know, I hit the forest that's at the end of the runway,
right,
or
yeah.
you know, whatever. And we're
the
talking
cheering
about
crowd.
And we're talking about miles here. So, you know, yeah. and it comes down to a matter of, you know, within a certain number of yards, if you start braking or you don't start braking,
yep.
That could be disastrous. So, you know, with the idea that, you know, there's a lead into the straight and a lead out of the straight, you're a little bit more flexible on how fast you can go and how far you can push it. And
right.
because maybe they only have to slow down to 150 as well at the end.
Yeah. And also Bugatti had already had a little bit of bad blood with Guinness over some testing
mm-hmm.
because, well, I don't want to call it bad blood, but they were disqualified. That's yeah. long and short of it.
Yeah. That's because of the altered speed limiter, right? They took out
right.
They took out the speed limiter in the car that was tested, and they determined later. Well, they found that out later, and they decided that, well, maybe the limit, you know, the 268 wasn't really possible in the car that they would sell on the showroom floor.
Yeah, and that counts as a modification.
Because I think the 257 that we mentioned was the limit of the production vehicle that they sold to the public.
Right.
Now, 268, yeah, that's exactly right. Without the limiter in place, 268 was possible, again, on that track, and I don't know. There's just all these little bits of rules that kind of get in the way of this record being broken.
Right. And let's go ahead and be clear about this. Guinness temporarily disqualified them because later they changed their mind and they gave the Super Sport its world's fastest designation because they said that the speed limiter did not inherently change the mechanical abilities of the vehicle.
Exactly right. And you know what, Ben? I'm going to say this. I mean, 268 miles per hour, this car deserves to be at the top of the list or near the top of the list.
It does.
It really does. It earned it. I mean, speed limited or not, you know, I mean, that's something that a point of contention, I guess, between Guinness and Bugatti. But, man, that's fast.
Before we get to number one, Scott, I'd like to ask our super producer, Noel, for a favor. Hey, Noel, can we get some badass car chase music?
All right, coming in at number one is the Hennessy Venom GT, Ben. 270 miles per hour. That's the fastest car right now.
Yeah.
World's fastest, 270 miles per hour.
That's 434 and a half kilometers per hour. Coming from Texas.
That is lightning fast. Can you imagine seeing a car pass you at 270 miles per hour, what that must be like?
I can imagine the sensation of the wind, but I'm not sure how good of a look you would get at it.
Yeah, imagine sticking your hand out the window at that speed. I mean,
it's like the Bigfoot of cars. It stays blurry.
It would be ripped off at that point. So this is from what they call a boutique automaker from Texas, Ben. I've never heard them call it a boutique automaker, but this is from Hennessy.
Right.
And, and of course, in Sealy, Texas, that's where their headquarters are. And they make this car that they call the Venom GT, which is basically, it's a hand-built vehicle that is on a stretched Lotus Siege body, and it's about, what's it got? It's got a 7-liter Corvette ZR1 engine that's also boosted by 2 turbochargers. So, holy cow. You know, I mean, you know how fast a ZR1 is.
Right, yeah.
And you know how fast, a 7-liter engine that's normally aspirated would be. I mean, you can picture that, right?
And now extrapolate that.
Now it's boosted by 2 turbochargers. I mean, holy cow, this thing's got to be quick. Quick and fast. Now, they did this record-breaking run recently. This happened in February of 2014.
Right, yeah.
On Valentine's Day.
Yeah, on Valentine's Day and at a NASA shuttle landing strip.
Yeah, that's where they had to go because, again, you know, you were talking about a space where you need miles of pavement to be able to do this long, flat pavement and to be able to, you know, have something that's wide open where no one is going to be, you know, there's not going to be no cross traffic, no people, no, fire hydrants to smash into, things like that. So, you know, you need a place like this. But I mean, it's impressive that they have to hire NASA to lease them some real estate to be able to do something like this.
Yes. Also, there's a bit of contention between our guys at Hennessy and our guys at Guinness because going back to the 30 car rule, Hennessy is, and I think this is kind of a bite your thumb at them thing.
Maybe.
So you have to build 30 cars, right, to qualify in the Guinness World Fastest Car category. How many are they building, Scott?
29.
That is so on purpose.
Yeah, I think so. You know, but then I thought, okay, if this, maybe the 30 cars, and I got to look into this, maybe 30 cars would push him from being what we called a boutique automaker into an actual production car builder.
Oh.
And it could be a tax issue.
Yeah, okay. It could be Uncle Sam.
It could be. And I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing that there's a reason he's stopping at 29.
You know what, buddy? I'm going to look into that because that's a very good point.
I mean, don't you think so? I mean, and also, you know, the other thing, you know, aside from the numbers of vehicles that he's building, he was only able to do a one-way run, and that was because NASA said we can only allow you to go one way on this track. And I don't know why they did that. Because we're talking about the space shuttle landing strip is what they're using.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they would allow it one way and not the other.
It's a one-way strip. In case the shuttles try to go back, they got those tire, this tire slashing things.
Yeah, that's right. Severe tire damage if you back up. Well, he's not going in reverse, but still, it would be a little jarring to hit something like that.
It is strange that they only allowed one run. I don't know what the story behind that was.
There's got to be a reason behind it. Maybe it's the way that the pavement has a pattern to it, or maybe there's something that's, about going against the grain of the pavement, the concrete or whatever.
Yeah. But they, let's see, because the typical run is you go from one end to the other, and then you go the opposite, right?
And then they take the average of the two.
Yeah. Maybe there's something with the grain of it, but there's definitely a reason behind it.
I don't know. I mean, I think that the reason that they do that is for wind conditions, so you don't have a tailwind that's helping you along, and, you know, there are other factors as well, but I think that the wind is the biggest issue there, to prove that you can do it twice in a row. You know, without, either facing the headwind or, you know, maybe there's a crosswind. I don't know. But there's a reason they have you do two runs, but this one only got to do one. So, and it's kind of one of those, like, is it really the fastest? Is it not? I don't know. But between the Hennessy Venom GT and the Bugatti Veyron Supersport, and, you know, I'm going to go ahead and throw the Agera R in there, too.
Yeah.
Those cars are so fast, Ben. I mean,
so
all of those. I mean, 260 to 270 separates the top three here on our list.
And that variance is close enough that if the three were racing, it would depend on who was driving.
You probably would, and it might even depend on the distance. You know, like, I don't know how quickly each of these gets up to that speed.
Yeah.
So I think each of them would have their own strength, and it would be, you know, the race could be determined by whose strength the limits of the race play into.
These cars are so fast that there are some races they just couldn't participate in for safety reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Nürburgring. Those turns? No way.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, they couldn't go top speed at that type of thing. But, you know, obviously they'd be very powerful on the track. I mean, as far as, you know, keeping their own, I guess, is, you know. Well, we see the one lap of Nürburgring. And I don't know if I can't say for sure if I know the Venom GT has tried the Nürburgring yet, but it seems like the kind of thing that it would do.
I mean, every car ultimately goes to the Nürburgring if it wants to prove its international reputation. So
isn't that funny how that's happened recently?
Yeah, all roads lead to Nürburgring. What's up with that?
I don't know, but that's within, you know, the last 6 or 7 years, really.
Yeah, it kind of is a new development. Anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about probably doesn't live in Europe, because I think every car fan in Europe at least knows about the Nürburgring.
Or has driven on it because it's open to the public.
Yep, that's the best part. So you can find out about that in our episode on this famous Proving Ground racetrack. We hope that you have enjoyed our episode on the current top 10 fastest cars.
Yeah, all the way up to 270. That's amazing. I wonder who's going to, you know, bust the 270 mark. If you know, the Veyron Supersport's going to do it with just a couple of miles
right,
per hour faster.
Yeah, they're sandbagging.
Yeah, maybe.
And another thing is, I would be surprised if this list doesn't change by this time next year, because this list always changes.
It likely will. It probably will be done, you know, even by this summer, Ben.
Yeah, it's a lot of the same people trading places in line, though.
At this point, it is.
Yeah, it's like musical chairs. But who knows? Maybe there will be a dark horse riding on to the front.
That would be cool. A newcomer.
Yeah. Before we go, Scott, you want to do a little listener mail?
Sure.
Okay, Scott, this comes to us from Facebook, and I think we've both checked this one out before. Kristen writes to us and says, "Hi, guys. I love the show. I'm a student in a large city with decent public transportation, so I don't currently have a car, but I'm enjoying working my way through the back catalog of Car Stuff to learn more about cars and tech history. Like you, I enjoy true crime and urban legends, but I did have a comment on your recent episode on the Dale car. While Liz Carmichael was clearly a serial fraudster, a megalomaniac, and a possible accomplice to the murder of her employee, I was a little uncomfortable with the way the surprise twist of her being transgendered was handled in the show." So she goes on to say, "At that point in trans history, transgender women were often expected, both by doctors and society at large, to distance themselves from their previous life and family. Don't get me wrong, Carmichael was clearly a con artist of the worst sort who took advantage of her transition to run from the law, but even perfectly innocent women with no criminal intent were often the subject of intense scrutiny and forced to make ridiculous sounding statements about their lives and career before transitioning." And then she recommends the book, How Sex Changed, The History of Transsexuality in the United States, by Joan Meyerowitz, for anyone who's interested in reading more about this medical discourse. And Kristen, I wanted to address your letter on air here just on that point really quickly. I see what you're saying here with us. One of the questions that I had with the Dale Carr and Liz Carmichael is whether Liz Carmichael was actually transitioning, because given Liz Carmichael's past, right, before she became Liz Carmichael, it was all filled with con artistry, disguises, embezzlement, lying. I feel like it may have just been another disguise.
Now, see, Ben, that's exactly the way I feel, and that's the way that we intended that to come out in the podcast. And I think that that's the true way that this was going down.
Right.
I think that the only reason that Liz Carmichael was portraying herself as female at that point was strictly to get away with that counterfeiting charge that she had from, you know, decades prior. And
yeah.
I really, really believe that. I don't think that, you know, I mean, I know she was taking hormones or whatever, but that aided in the disguise.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at here is a specific case of a single criminal. And we're not in any way casting aspersion on the trans community.
No, no. I saw this strictly as a desperate measure to get away from the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what it took. And this person decided to go this specific way with this and said, I'm going to live the rest of my life as a female and they'll never ever find me. And I'm going to take hormones to help mm-hmm. me along this way. And, you know, we guessed that maybe the money that they raised was going to go towards a surgery or whatever, but I don't think that Liz Carmichael or I forget the guy's name, that the guy that, or the
original,
the male name that that Liz was born with, or the male identity that Liz was born with. I think that was just something that came about afterwards, after the counterfeiting scheme,
sure.
you know, fell apart on him, and then he decided to become a she in order to cover up his trail.
Yeah. I think what this is something that you and I talked about as we were working on the show, because I think we didn't and we don't want Liz Carmichael or the actions of Liz Carmichael to be seen as representative in any way of who should we start with? Car executives, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Salesmen. Saleswomen, transgender people.
This was a bizarre story all around.
And a bad apple at the center. But Kristen, we really appreciate what you're saying. And as always, being part of How Stuff Works, not just Car Stuff, but any of our shows, we always encourage people to learn more. So we wanted to put your book recommendation on air for anybody who had more questions about that. And of course, for the Dale Carr episode, I still think it's such a fantastic true crime story, and I think people really enjoy it. Ties into the Preston Tucker episode. Scott, all our stories are starting to, all the really interesting ones are starting to have these connections. Have you noticed that?
There's a web.
There's a web for sure. Kristen ends with one suggestion. She says, on a completely different note, I used to be an intern at the Historical Museum in Racine, Wisconsin, and came across a mention of Reverend Dr. J.W. Carhart, who apparently invented some sort of steam-powered, self-propelled vehicle during the 1870s. Have you done an episode about various attempts to create self-propelled vehicles prior to the invention of the modern automobile?
Aha! Well, how timely was that, Ben? Because
Very interesting.
We have just recorded one that was, what was it called? The Puffing Devil?
The Puffing Devil,
yes. So look for the Puffing Devil episode and you'll get your answer.
Yeah, for that case. Now, with this reverend you mentioned, I think we're going to have to check into a couple other sources and see what happens.
The Reverend Carhart. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah, talk about a predictive name. All right, so we hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Scott, you and I are due to head off to work on some more self-propelled vehicles, maybe, a couple of other things. Continue our earlier mutual rants about cruise control, which you can, I think people will hear in an upcoming episode. In the meantime, do check out our website, carstuffshow.com, as well as follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And you can always send us an email directly. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.